how many of us would love to just have God just change some people in our lives so that they treated us better, our boss or customer or someone else. But God doesn't typically do that either. But God does have ways of expressing his love for us.
This podcast is brought to you by Blackbee Ministries International. To find out more, visit blackbee.org.
Well, welcome to the Richard Blackaby Leadership Podcast. My name is Sam Camp, and I'm your host, and I'm joined by Dr. Richard Blackaby.
As always, Sam, I can't say enough how good it is to be with you.
Well, and I never get tired of hearing how great it is to be in my presence, Richard.
So yeah, you brought me fresh eggs from the camp farms. And
yeah, our campstead. We just picked up some fresh piglets as well over the weekend.
Bacon.
Oh, man, bacon in the making. And it's a glorious, glorious thing. And we love this time of year, especially with baby animals coming on to the place there. But wanted to just send out a quick reminder about the coaching workshop that is right around the corner. We've actually extended the early bird sign-up discount. You have to use the code EARLYBIRD at checkout. There's information on the website, blackabycoaching.org. But that is good until the 12th, I believe. Okay. And so if you're hearing this on the 9th, you've got a few days to sign up and get a discount for registration. But that's coming up April.
That's a real good deal, too, especially.
It is.
I mean, even for the full price is very competitive for what you'd get anywhere else.
But yeah.
The discount makes it really attractive.
It is. And it's something you don't want to miss, especially if you work with people. And I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, that's something that you do.
Yeah.
Some part of your work, your life is connecting with other people. And so many people can benefit from just the skills and the insights that come from this coaching workshop. So as always, we'll leave links to that.
Yeah. And Sam, I just talked to someone yesterday that said that they had been on the wait list to get into the Cove to hear me speak on the ways of God on May 15th to 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew there was a wait list, but it usually, there's always cancellations, health issues come up and things, and people have to back out. And so she was all thrilled. They'd called her and said, "We've got a room for you now." So she's coming.
Great.
So some of you have thought about going. I just had someone else contact me this past week and say, "Is it too late?" And I said, "Well, it's not too late to sign up if you maybe stay in a local hotel. You can certainly come, but even then, if you get on the wait list for a room right on site, there's always people at the last minute that have to bail, and so not too late at least to get your name on, and they'll call you if something opens up." So
that's for your conference on the ways of God at the Cove in May.
So all
we have links for both of those will be in the show notes as well. So
love to see you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that out of the way, Richard, where are we going on today's podcast?
Well, Sam, there's an interesting person. We've done studies, and we'll do some more, I'm sure, on just leaders in the Bible, and there's some obvious ones like Joshua or Nehemiah that led well, and they Gideon. Sometimes people that don't necessarily look like leaders, but they get a lot done, and ultimately they are responsible for a lot of accomplishments, but. But I also, there's some other people that are just, in one sense, when you read their story, they're kind of tragic figures. And you read their story and you think, well, I'm glad I'm not them. But at the same time, I think there's also some lessons to be learned from them. And so I was recently studying in Genesis 29. And of course, that is following through with the story of Jacob. And Jacob he had plenty of character issues, was a deceiver, he had cheated his brother, stolen from his brother, had lied, bold-faced lied to his father, finally had to flee because his brother wanted to kill him. And so early on in Jacob's life, he's making a lot of mistakes, but he travels to his relatives, his mother's relatives, and when he arrives in Genesis 29, he meets Rachel that he's going to fall in love with, and the Bible says in chapter 29 that she is shapely and beautiful, is what my translation says in verse 17, And that's going to be an interesting love story that will unfold in the Bible. But of course, famously, Rachel's got an older sister, Leah. And I don't know if I've ever heard of a leadership passage or discussion based on Leah.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying necessarily that she even is a leader, but she also has a life, and she is a person that's highly valued by God. And
yeah.
And I've just been convinced that sometimes I think we all just need to be reminded that whether you are the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or you're pastoring a mega church, or maybe you're just just have a blue collar job, just putting in your 40 hours every week, that whatever it is you do, you are valued by God.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a purpose, and God loves you. But God also doesn't necessarily give you the same thing he gives others. And that can really be a challenge sometimes. And so Leah, it says, in verse 17, my translation says, Leah had tender eyes, but Rachel was beautiful, it says. And that word tender eyes can mean weak eyes, or it could mean gentle eyes. We're not quite sure what that means. It's written in contrast to Rachel, so it's clear that Rachel's beautiful. And so either that means Rachel's beautiful, but Leah has weak eyes, which whatever that means, or else just not attractive eyes, or perhaps maybe more likely it just means that she had gentle eyes. Maybe it might be a compliment. It might be, she had nice eyes, but Rachel was just beautiful of form. And so what it might be saying is Leah, it's not like Leah doesn't have any good qualities, but just not what Jacob's
looking for on
top of his priority list. And so Leah, and then of course there's that tragic story where Jacob is smitten by Rachel and tells his future father-in-law Laban, I'll work 5 years for you.
Seven
years for you. If you will let me then marry Rachel. And so what a great love story. He's willing to labor for 7 years. I don't remember that offer coming from you to marry Carrie, but
I would have done that.
Yeah, you would have. Let the record show.
Yeah.
And so then on the wedding night, when we assume Jacob is probably a little bit inebriated, perhaps, from the wedding festivities, or he's exhausted, tired, whatever, Laban sends in, probably with a veil on, his daughter Leah, not Rachel, the one that Jacob's been working for. And so it says in a kind of a huge understatement, that when he wakes up in the morning, and he looks to his beautiful wife, it says it was not Rachel at all, but it was Leah, and that huge disappointment. And I kind of feel like in a sense I can't even imagine the fear, the beating heart of Leah just waiting for sunlight to come out and for her husband to be disappointed in her.
Mm.
And that just has to be tragic. And Leah, pretty well every way you look at it, is a tragic figure. And her whole life, it seems, is a futile attempt to try to get her husband to love her.
Yeah.
And so the day after her wedding, her husband, instead of delighting in her, is extremely disappointed. Jacob goes to his father-in-law Laban and says, why have you done this to me? Why have you deceived me? And of course, it's ironic that the great deceiver is outraged that someone has deceived him.
He's been out-Jacobed.
Yeah. And so Laban says, gives kind of a flimsy excuse, and then says, but if you work 7 more years for me, then you can also have Rachel. So he doesn't have to wait 7 years to have Rachel. He has to wait a week. And so that probably was one of the most difficult, awkward weeks probably in Leah's life. My husband's sort of putting up with me for a week so that he can get the woman that he really loves after that. And so it just, it's a heart-wrenching, terrible story. And this is all happening with one of the patriarchs. Jacob will be renamed Israel one day, and the Israelite people will descend from him. But and not all this is Jacob's fault. Obviously, Laban is the one that deceives him and makes his daughter do that. But for Leah, she lives a very disappointed life. Of course, all she wants is to have a husband who loves her and cherishes her and wants her. And she's basically consigned to always be the number two wife in his husband's world, and to always be a disappointment in one sense to the one person she really wants to please. And so verse 31, it says, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb. And so, and then he's going to give her a series of four kids, ultimately six sons and then a daughter as well. And at first she starts having children and she thinks, well, this will cause my husband to love me, because Rachel's not having any kids. And of course, as a shepherd, there's nothing you wanted more than lots of sons that could help manage your business and take over when you were too old to do it yourself. And they would take care of you in your old age. And so you have to have, as much as you might love your wife, you really are needing desperately to have sons. And so Leah fires off four sons. And the first one's Reuben, second one's Simeon. And then the last two are particularly interesting. You have Levi, from which all the priests will come, including people like Moses and Aaron will come from Levi. And then the fourth son is Judah. And of course, from him will come David, Solomon, and ultimately the Messiah. And so she is in no small way going to have an enormous impact when the Messiah comes from your descendants. When Jesus is one of your great-great-greats, that's pretty awesome. When King David comes from you, looks up to you as from his line, that's an awesome, awesome privilege. But at first, Leah just says, if I have this son, then my husband will love me. And then this second son, now for sure my husband will love me. And then the third son, Levi, well, now he's going to be attached to me. Surely with three sons, I'm going to cause him to love me. Yeah. And by the fourth son, interestingly, Judah, she says, well, I'm going to worship God. And it's almost as if by the fourth son, she realizes the obvious that I could have 100 sons. It's not going to change how my husband feels about me. He's going to like having the sons, but I don't know that I can cause him to ever love me. And you know, it's interesting that later in the next chapter, Reuben, her oldest son, is going to come and bring some mandrakes for her. And Rachel's actually going to be covetous of that. And she has no sons to bring nice things to her. And she's going to negotiate to get some of those mandrakes. And what's interesting to me is that God is all powerful. And so Leah could have prayed and just said, God, could you just make me more beautiful? You made me, just why can't you just make me more beautiful so my husband loves me? Or you can change a person's heart. Why don't you just cause Jacob's heart to change so that he loves me? But God doesn't typically interfere with people that way. However he made you, I mean, you can exercise and take care of yourself and maybe have work out and develop a better version of you, but it's still going to be you. And God doesn't just cause other people to relate to you the way you want them to. How many of us would love to just have God just change some people in our lives so that they treated us better, our boss or customer or someone else. But God doesn't typically do that either. But God does have ways of expressing his love for us. And of course, I think what's going to happen with Leah in time, especially as she has her next couple of kids, is that she's going to learn that she is loved. Not loved by her husband, like she's always wanted, but she will be loved by her kids, and she's going to realize from that that she's loved by God, and so she learns to just say, that's not really the life I dreamed of when I was a young girl. I didn't dream of just having kids who love me. I dreamed of a husband who would love me too, but that just doesn't seem to be the way it's going to work out for me, for whatever reason. Oftentimes it can be because of the sin of people, the sin of Laban. If Laban had just left Leah alone, she might have found someone on her own that loved her and chose her. But instead, she's just thrown into a bad deal that is going to just make Jacob resentful. And so, you know, I think one thing I've had to learn is that I've just over the years, I've just met a lot of people. And I've been there too, where you just wish some aspect of your life was different. You know, and it can really stick in your craw sometimes, mm-hmm. where it just bothers you. Well, God, why did you give me this? Why did you give me that? I just watched on Facebook this morning a pastor that was sharing that he had just discovered he had cancer, and this pastor serves a great church, and now he is going to have to face a journey dealing with cancer. And of course, that's not what you ever hope for.
Yeah.
And when you're serving God, when you're a pastor, when you love God, you're encouraging people to love God as well. You just never envision having to battle for your life in a cancer treatment center. But I so appreciated his response in saying, but God still loves me, and God has just, he's blessed me with a supportive wife, a supportive church, a supportive family. And I appreciate the fact he was saying, although my life's not all that I would hope it would be, I don't have to look far to see that God really does love me. And so I think just some advice I would give just from this is, you have to embrace the life that God gives you, not the life he hasn't given you. And when you embrace the life God gives you, that doesn't mean that you don't try to make that life as good as you can. If God has given you a middle management job and you never make CEO, well, there's a lot of ways you can do a really good job as a middle manager. And you know, God might have given you one child and you really wanted to have eight. Well, you know, that you could be disappointed that that's not how it worked out, but you could take what God has given you and you can do a great job with that. And sometimes in marriage, you know, you marry and you have all these visions of what your spouse will be like, and then they may be good people and they may love you, but just never become all that you hope they would become.
Yeah.
And at some point, I mean, not that you can't work on your marriage and try to make it as good as you can, but at a certain point, I think you also can't live a life of constant disappointment where you focus on what God hasn't given you instead of focusing on what he has. And, you know, just one kind of current thing that is very real in our family right now. Some of our listeners may follow me on social media, and I've been telling some of the story of my sister. If you know the Blackaby family, there's five children. I'm the oldest. There's four boys, and then there's a sister. And the four boys all became pastors at one point. We're all in ministry today. And my sister became a missionary. And she served for about 17 years in Germany with her husband. And now she's back in Atlanta here where we are. And she serves with our ministry part-time, and her husband works at our church, and they're in service to the Lord as well. But if you've ever taken experience in God, you know that when my sister was just 16, she came down with very, very advanced cancer, and they weren't sure that they were even going to be able to save her because it was so advanced, and she was so full of it. But the doctors at that time basically threw the kitchen sink at her, just radiation, chemo. She was horribly sick from the treatments, throwing up and all kinds of pain and suffering. But miraculously, it worked and they saved her. But especially with the radiation, they had blasted her with it so much, trying to make sure they got it all and it wouldn't come back, that they did some serious damage to her. And she didn't really experience a lot of that initially, but as she got older, there were just various things that she would suffer from. And back in 2020, she discovered she had double breast cancer. It had two different kinds of cancer, and which had to be treated two different ways. And we prayed through that with her, and they said, we feel like this probably is a result of all the radiation in her chest that she had. And that was a long journey as God worked through that with her. And then a little while ago, she had a tumor that had developed in the side of her head, and it had actually attached to her skull. And she, about 2 months ago or so, had to have that removed. And in the process of having that removed, her kidneys stopped working. They shut down. She ended up in the hospital for quite a while, and then things. She got out in time, and what was very having a hard time breathing, having a hard time walking. Her legs were filling up with fluids. It felt like she had cement wrapped around her ankles, and ultimately went back in the hospital and has been there now for, I don't know, 2 months or so. It's been a long time. And intensive care, and she was in the hospital, and things got worse and worse and worse, and finally she had to be airlifted to the main heart hospital in Atlanta, one of the best heart hospitals in America. And and she was literally fighting for her life. She had to be put on life support, and they said her heart was looked like the heart of a 90-year-old. She's 53, I think, and but she had a 90-something-year-old heart, and it was calcified, not working properly, not pumping blood the way it should, and it was causing her kidneys to overwork, and it was just a whole series of just crises in her body physically. And so just trying to pray through that. And, you know, I just, as I would visit her, I would just think she's had more cancer. She's had more serious physical illnesses than all four of her brothers combined. And, you know, her brothers have all done various things, and here she is just trying to fight for her life. And it doesn't seem fair. You know, you think, well, that's God, why don't you spread around the illnesses and so on? But that has been her road. And, you know, what's interesting is God has given her two wonderful kids, an amazing husband, my brother-in-law, who's just been by her side the whole time. And yet there maybe just two things to share. When she was in the first hospital, my sister is not traveling the world speaking like I am. She doesn't write prolifically and doesn't speak a lot in on stages, but she was ministering to just some single girls that were going to our church, and would have these single adults in her home and feed them and minister to them. And when she was in the first hospital and things were getting really bad, she this one single girl that my sister had ministered to, she heard that that Carrie was in the hospital, and so she worked at a different hospital, but she could get online. It was a like an affiliated hospital, and she checked, and she could see that her heart was declining, that they were having to give her more and more meds, and she realized what that meant. She worked at the really good heart hospital. She understood heart issues, and so she actually went to her supervisor and said, "We need to get this woman over to our hospital as quickly as possible." And they airlifted her to that hospital. And they all said afterwards she would have died had she not been moved when she was. Literally, it was in a matter of hours before she died. But she got to the main hospital, the great heart hospital, and they put her on life support. And I thought to myself, you know, Carrie might have said, she didn't say this, but she might have said, you know, my brothers all speak and travel and do all these things, and my ministry seems to be administered in part to single adults. That can be a pretty thankless job sometimes. But it was one of those single adults that may well have saved her life by taking the initiative to get her moved when she did. And then just yesterday, We were at the hospital because of just a number of complications and lack of circulation with a heart that's not working. Her right leg got just very, very bad shape. And basically, there just wasn't circulation there. There were blood clots there. And the lower part of her leg had gotten so bad that yesterday the doctors told us that they're going to have to amputate it. Mm-hmm. And my sister actually has been unconscious for a couple of days because of all the heart surgeries they've been doing. And we just thought how terrible she's going to come. She's going to gain consciousness from her heart surgery and find out that she lost a leg while she was anesthetized there. And so we felt so heavy-hearted and burdened that a number of us went down to the hospital and just sat with our brother-in-law. And they said that they didn't even have enough good tissue. They needed at least 3 inches of good tissue below her knee to save the knee. But they didn't even have 3 good inches, so they were going to have to remove her leg above the knee. And they were in surgery for over 7 hours. We sat there for 7 hours waiting for the results. And finally, the surgeon came out, and we all sort of braced ourselves for the, you know, why did it take so long when there must have been more complications and so on. And he starts to tell us what was doing, and he doesn't mention amputating her leg. And finally, he just says, so I didn't have to amputate. And I'll tell you, if you were there and everything you've been told is they couldn't even amputate below the knee. They've got to do it above the knee, and it just all looks bad. Always the worst case scenario. And then the surgeon comes out and he says that when he went in to amputate, he saw enough good tissue that was forming that it just gave him reason to think there might be hope. And so he cleaned out a bunch of blood clots. He did some things to expand the veins, get some more circulation going. And he said, I'm just hopeful that that's all going to take. And this morning, her husband reported that her leg is looking much, much better. That's improving. And so, you know, a small thing, like when you've got two different mechanical devices on either side of your heart, just keeping your heart pumping, you'd think, God, could it be any worse? And then she's going to potentially lose a leg. And then, really miraculously, God just spares her leg. We just felt, we had a worship service there in the lobby. And in many ways, I just felt like my sister, in some ways, is like Aaliyah. She's just had a really tough road in a lot of ways, that not of her choosing, mm-hmm. not from choices that she made, just her lot, the way that she was made, the body she was given. And yet, she's always had a very sweet disposition that way, not complained, always tried to glorify God. And we were so, so grateful. You could certainly look at all the tubes that she still has, the mechanical devices, and say, wow, what a rough life. But you don't want to miss out the good things that God is doing, the miracles he's doing, the mm-hmm. expressions of love that are obvious if you look for them. And so, you know, just for our listeners today, I would just say, some of you, it might not be that you've got necessarily a really difficult, hard life, but you probably have some things that are not what you'd want, some things you wish were different. And you might even be wondering, God, why is my life so hard right now? Do you love me? Do you care about me? And it might be that, like Leah or like my sister, you need to look around and say, well, these things aren't what I would want or hope for. But you know what? God still, like, I don't have to look far before I see where God has just expressed his love and concern for me, and he is with me, and he is active in my life as well. And so I need to take this life that God's given me, it's the only one I'll ever have, and just see all the good that God has put in it, to celebrate that, to embrace it, to make it the best I can. And it might not be the same life my brother's had, my friend has, my fellow student has, but it's the life God's given me, and so it's a gift, and I want to treat it that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Richard, for walking us through this, and it's a great reminder on how to look at your life, and so thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If this is something you enjoyed, it really makes a difference if you leave a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends. We always love hearing from our listeners, so email us at podcasts@blackbee.org.